Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Sal. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding.
Who you got for us today?
Well, someone that's outstanding in their field, and he is in the field, literally, if we can see him. For those of you that are joining us, listen to the podcast on another platform. If you're on YouTube, you can tell that Glenn is camoed up, if you can see him.
Must be turkey season.
It is turkey season. And he is out in the field now. We're going to talk about probably burning down some cover crops. But did you see any birds this morning, Glenn?
I did not. I did hear several, and I had some approach, and I hope they didn't catch me getting out of the blind. But I was going to have to exit anyway, right? I wasn't going to spend very long in the blind this morning.
They probably heard the keyboard tapping on your computer as you're putting PowerPoints together.
Yeah, it's very probable. I was actually working in Word, not PowerPoint this morning, but that might have more to do with the question of the day, actually.
Oh, that's right. Before we get started, thank you, Glenn. So here is the question of the day. Glenn, what is the most insignificant or simple task that you could have easily done yourself, or relatively easily, that you hired somebody else to do?
Oh, I have to do that a lot, right? So I've actually got a guy to actually service some tractors this spring, which I could very easily do myself, but I've gotten deep enough into the spring, and I've spent so much time on planters and sprayers and everything else that when it comes to just common things like servicing tractors, I've actually got a fellow hired that's hopefully going to make it this weekend to do that for me. But this was all an attempt to poke fun at my OCD, right?
Yes, I was telling about that before you got on.
And then you immediately start talking about me working in PowerPoint this morning, and I corrected you. No, I'm not working in PowerPoint. I'm working in Word, which maybe says something about my OCD. But I've really decided that we're all a little bit that way, right? It's just, what are you OCD about?
I think you're right.
So for you, success looks like having a really clean floorboard in the passenger side of your truck. For me, that is, you know, it's having a uniform keel, right? If you look behind me, it's about having a uniform keel and no triangles and back into the corners and nice straight rows, right? And for Jeff Jarrett, we know that it's all about having every hair in place.
Oh my goodness.
I comb my hair just for you this morning.
Hey, why not me? But, look at, I got it. I got some parting.
But they both look great, Sal.
That's right. Well, hold on a second. Before we get back to that kill on the field, Jeff, what would you outsource that you could have easily done yourself?
I'm embarrassed to mention all the times I've had, you know, contractors come in and do something, then you watch them do it and you're like, that was so simple. Why didn't I do it myself? And then there's other things that I've done. I thought, oh, I can do this myself. And then you get into the middle of it and you got to call a contractor and bail you out. But I think I did a plumbing thing one time, and water line and, you know, frost free hydrant. And I did all the work of digging it out. And then I hired a guy to finish it for me. And I watched him do it. And it was like, yeah, he was there 15 minutes. And I'm like, that was stupid.
And you did all the hard work.
I did all the hard work.
Yeah.
Well, my son did most of the hard work, but full disclosure, he did most of the digging. So
mine's plumbing also. And, you know, about every so many years or so that you'll have that wax ring on the toilets, mm-hmm. you know, that you have to replace one of those. I hate doing that. And it's not the smell. It's just the fact of getting the toilet lined up.
And you're worried about it leaking.
Yes. And getting it set on straight. And I'd rather just have a plumber come in and.
I don't mind the wax rings, but I did learn one trick. When you go to town, they're real cheap, buy two of those wax rings.
Okay.
That way, if you have a backup.
When the first one doesn't work.
Yeah. But if you have the spare, the first one always works.
That's good.
Yeah. But if you don't have the spare, you will screw that first one up.
That's right. Okay. All right, Glenn, take us through.
This went from OCD to superstition is what this went
yeah,
to.
Yeah, right.
But that's actually true. I'm in full agreement, Jeff.
Yeah, always buy a spare.
Profound words right there.
You will
there.
Never find that spare the next time you need it, but always have a spare.
Glenn, what are you looking at behind you?
Yeah. So actually, I was just checking this field. And not only was this a great location because we've got full bars of service, but it's a wonderful example of where we made an audible this spring to basically give us a little better weed control, right? So when you think about termination of cover crop, oftentimes there's things that we put in the tank that get in the way of glyphosate being, really efficacious on, say, cereal grains. And cereal grains, if you've ever had a problem with termination, you've often heard me say that it looks like a calico cat, right? Yeah. You've got green places, you've got necrotic places. And this is a field where, I had every intention of burning it down really, really early and then coming back with a pre-emerge. We got later and a week ago, by the way, this is a week on glyphosate 2,4-D. Normally you would not expect it to be, you'd expect it to be kind of bright yellow, yeah, in a week's time, but you would not expect this amount of necrosis. And the reason why you're seeing the necrosis is because we pulled the metribuzin. We'll do it in a pre-emerge pass, after we plant, or the atrazine in this field. This is actually a cornfield. And what we put in was a PPO, right? PPOs are really good about complementing glyphosate and 2,4-D without being antagonistic, right? And so the PPOs would be things like Sharpen and Valor. Those products really do a great job of complementing Roundup as opposed to antagonizing Roundup, if that makes sense.
It does. So, yeah. Glenn, you've been thinking a lot about, as we've been burning down cover crops, and you've been thinking a lot about droplet sizes. Can you kind of tell the listeners how important, I think how we got to the droplet size discussion in the first place, I think with dicamba, and now where we're at today? You might just kind of give us the skinny on droplet sizes.
Yeah, that is the $64,000 question today. And I think all growers struggle with this, right? We went for years training growers that you don't have to make a fog, right? Sal, you've spent years training growers, prior to dicamba technology, right? We'll call it Xtend technology. But prior to that trait, we spent years trying to get growers to recognize that you don't have to make a fog to get good coverage, right? That's fine for fungicides, that's fine for insecticides, but for herbicides, really there's a span, there's a range of about 240 to about 400 microns that most contact and even systemic herbicides work best in, right? And so for years we trained growers, don't run your pressure way up and make these fogs that drift out of the field and get off target. It's really about running these intermediate pressures and running the right size nozzle to get that 240 to 500 micron volume medium diameter. VMD is how we measure that, but it's basically the mean average of a droplet. And if you're wondering why that is so important, right? If we double the droplet size, believe it or not, it increases in volume a huge amount. So when you double the droplet size, let's say we go from a 200 micron droplet to a 400 micron droplet, do you realize that a 400 micron droplet has 8 times the volume of a 200 micron droplet, right? You could basically, because it's three-dimensional, right? It's pi times the radius cubed, right? And so there's a lot more volume in a large droplet than just the it's not proportional to their diameter, right? And so Consequently, right, we spent years training guys to go to a little bit larger droplets. Then when Extend technology came, right, and we started using products like Extendamax and Ingenia, which were low volatility formulations, but yet when they get out of bounds, it shows up. We started training guys to go into the other end of the range, not the middle of the range, but we trained them specifically. And there was parameters around making applications that forced growers to go into these 500 plus micron. So in other words, in Wilger, we were using URs and DR nozzles. In T-Jet, we went from flat fans and AXRs to what they call TTIs. And these things throw maybe even bigger than twice as big a droplets, right? And so, that technology has run its course, and it may be not because of utility, but because of regulation. And today we're back to using this, a lot of the same contact and systemic herbicides that we were using prior to the Extend technology, right? So we're back to using things like Liberty, Roundup, diphenyl ethers, the PPOs, for example. All of those products tend to like droplets in that medium range, right? And if I had it here handy, I would put up a picture of what water sensitive paper looks like, right? But if you're in medium droplet size, it covers that card with relatively small droplets, right? But they are large enough that they don't immediately evaporate. If we go to 500-600 micron droplets or bigger, it just looks like there's a few big splotches on the card. And most herbicides don't perform very well that way. So yeah, I swear, there's always going to be employment for agronomists, right? Because as much as things change, they stay the same. And yeah, we're back to, we probably need to be training growers if they're going to use Liberty, they're going to use Enlist technology. Of course, Enlist does have some parameters, but it's certainly more flexible than what was Extend, right? We can use AIXR nozzles. We can get down into maybe not medium, but we can certainly get into coarse and just very coarse, which is still significantly smaller than these ultra coarse droplets that we got dependent on there for a while.
Are you seeing, hey Glenn, we're coming off the windiest April on record. So I'm guessing this droplet size is also to our benefit because every day we've been fighting this wind to be able to get the sprayers in the field.
Absolutely. And so this is the yin and yang. This is the thing we're trying to thread all the time, right? Is, you know, if we get too big, yes, we can apply at 20 miles an hour in a screaming windstorm and we can hit the ground, but we may not be leaving enough on the plants to actually get good control with a foliar herbicide, right? And so, this is a challenge for custom application. It's a challenge for growers in general. Now, that's where there's some other technology, right? This will put a smile on Sal's face, but without question, drift reduction technology, specifically Interlock, has just made a huge impact on that, right? So if we go to TTI nozzles, probably you don't, Interlock's probably not going to make that big a difference. But when we get into that span of nozzles that give us the best performance, oftentimes they do produce fines. How do we get rid of those fines? How do we ensure that when we spray right up next to the neighbor lady's yard, we don't kill her fruit trees and tap of her lawn? Well, we put Interlock in the tank. And I almost took you there this morning to show you the line because I couldn't be prouder, right? I had an unfavorable wind. It was still within the guidelines, but I had an unfavorable wind. And of course, when you have everybody's experienced this, right? It doesn't matter what direction the wind is coming from when you're in the middle of a housing development, right? Somebody is downwind. Of course, at Premier, we have some wonderful applicators that do a wonderful job of looking out for not just our clients' interests, but even the neighbors of our clients. And putting that boom low to the ground, turning. In our case, we, most of our machines have pulse width, what we call pulse width technology, yeah. Right? It's the ability to spray at the same pressure regardless of your speed is what it is. So when we talk about PWM, it's really about being able to put on, keeping volume, spray volume, proportionate to your speed without increasing pressure. Because this is probably the thing that I don't think most growers, even some applicators, maybe don't understand, that when it comes to volume and speed, they are proportional. When you double the speed, you have to double the volume to keep the rate per acre the same. But when you double the speed, guess what happens to pressure? You don't have to double the pressure. You actually have to quadruple the pressure, right? And so consequently, having this technology that allows you to take a larger nozzle, run it on some portion of the duty cycle, right? As opposed to running it 100% of the time, pulsing it 10 times per second. And then, maybe if you're going slow, you're at a 40 or 50% duty cycle. Maybe when you speed up, you double that, you go from 80 to 100% of the duty cycle, but you're still spraying at the same pressure, right? Because that's what really got us in trouble, right? You take a sprayer that is set up to spray 15 or 20 gallons at 8 miles an hour, and they go to 16 miles an hour, they maybe just went from 30 PSI to 120 PSI. Well, at 120 PSI, we're throwing a lot. There is no amount of drift reduction agent that is going to cure 120 PSI through a flat pan nozzle, wow. Right? It's going to fog, right? Between PWM technology, whether you're talking about products like Interlock, Master Lock, AccuDrop, right? These drift reduction technologies we put in the tank, and just better awareness, right? I think that as an agronomist and even the folks that I support, I think they get a certain amount of fatigue talking about nozzles and talking about spray applications because they think that everyone has heard that message. And they may have heard it, but they didn't necessarily absorb it. Because you'd be surprised how many faux pas I see around the countryside, right? I see guys that have multiple different types of nozzles on the same sprayer. I see guys running around with boom tips up in the air, right? And they look like they're ready to take off and fly. We see folks that are running crazy high pressure and it looks like a fog coming out the back, and you can see the cloud moving across the field at a right angle to the downwind side. And then you also see guys that'll shut down. They'll slow down and you'll see their pattern collapse. In other words, instead of having a 110 degree angle, on that nozzle, you'll see it go down to where it looks like it's just dribbling. Well, you're not going to get control if it's just dribbling out of the nozzle. And so has technology made it easier to make better applications? Absolutely. What you can't see in this field behind me is this field has like 13 Wascops. And there's not a straight side hardly on. And having section control, what we call swath control or section control, different brands call it different things. Having swath control to where you can, basically drive any pattern you want. And if it's been applied before, it shuts it off, that boom section. And if it hasn't applied, it turns the boom section on. That technology has been just a game changer. Most operators would agree that if they had to give up swath control or auto steer, they'd give up auto steer every day for swath control.
Wow. It has changed so much. It used to be a big deal that we could shut off either boom or the section behind the, you had three, you had the left boom, you had the both booms and then the section behind. So you had three choices, and now you can, it's almost like you're out there painting a field whenever you're spraying. So it's pretty amazing really changed how we do waterways. Well, it changed how we spray.
Yeah. Yeah. And even the waterway thing, that has even changed here in recent years. Whether we're talking about internally, we have folks that will go out and map fields so that when they get to the waterway, they don't have to lay off a land around them and they don't even have to turn it off manually. It recognizes that that is a waterway and will basically shut it off because it's already been mapped in advance. So, yeah, 21st century technology is doing some wonderful things to make growers' lives, easier and really do a better job of getting herbicides where they're supposed to be, and that is in the field and not on the neighbor and not on the off-target stuff, right?
So very good.
It's wonderful technology.
Hey, Glenn, what about, I've been watching this one field on the way to work. I don't know anything about what was used on it. That looks like they got a great early burn down on it, but that's been about a month and they have not been able to get back in there and plant that field. It seems like it's got a couple wet holes in it. So, each time we get one of these little rains coming through, it kind of sets them back. How long is that burn down going to last? And I know it's going to be, kind of up to whatever the residual they put in the tank, but I mean, when we burn these fields down, do you like to be in there in the next 30 days minimum? Or what do you do when you start stretching out there? Do you start getting nervous?
Yeah, man, what an insightful question. Man, there's a dozen places. That's why I'm here,
Glenn. I tell you, Jeff, he always gets that response from Glenn. What an insightful question.
Well, what a great segue, right? So that's probably the way it was planned, right? They probably wanted to do it. I mean, most people have cover crops that burn down early, like the idea of kind of putting the cover crop on its heels, exposing some ground so that you don't have to, have transpiration. You're actually getting evaporation from the ground. So the ground tends to dry up a little quicker if you get it terminated early, but the solution is probably what they expected all along. They didn't expect the residual to hold all year. They just wanted it to hold until they got the crop planted. And then one of my favorite timings, if I had to pick one timing to make herbicide applications and when I want it to be perfect, is my pre-emerge application, right? Because that's the last chance you can put stuff down that cannot be used foliar, right? So you think about the PPOs. There's a lot of PPOs we can use foliar, but the ones that give us the greatest utility, right? The things like sulfentrazone and flumioxazin, even saflufenicil on corn at higher rates, those products need to be used pre-emerge only, right? So that last pass before the crop comes up, we can put on huge doses of Group 15, right? That's the Outlooks, the Warrants, the Ziduas, the Duals. It's a great time to put on a PPO. It's a great time to get a layer on the surface that will really exploit the fact that a lot of these hard to control herbicide resistant weeds start out as small seeded, and they're very vulnerable when they first emerge. So that is my favorite pass, right? If it's corn, that's when we're going to put on probably 2/3 of our residual, right? Is on that pre-emerge pass. If we're talking about soybeans, that's probably going to be about half of our residual control for the entire season. So does that answer your question?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, outstanding. Yeah, well, great questions.
Glenn, are you going to go jump in a planter today? You think we'll have any ground that'll go?
No, I looked pretty hard yesterday. I've got a buddy that's he's gotten behind on spraying, and I've got my burn down caught up. I'm probably going to go help him initially, and then probably need to be working on tile holes and all those things that we hate to do, right? You know, Sal, you're a really good operator. Maybe you should come over and run the backhoe while I do the grunt work and tape tile back together.
That'd be all right. There you go.
He's packing his stuff. he's ready to leave at any minute.
I'll tell you what the first order of business is. You know that it's opening day of turkey season because the buffalo gnats are out, right?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't had buffalo gnats all year, and while we've been standing out here, they are just tearing me up.
Well, that means the wind's not blowing, so that's good.
That's right. The wind is not blowing. Anyway,
if they bite you, Glenn, I'm pretty sure they're going to spit you out.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
He said if they bite you, he's pretty sure they'll spit you back out.
Pardon me. I don't know.
All right, Glenn, we'll better get your day back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Day to be young and a tiger, man.
That's right. Thank you.
Take care, Glenn.
Thanks, guys.
That's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you all very much.